Sexual assault on college campuses garnered unprecedented attention in 2014, both around the country and here in East Lansing. Last January, President Obama formed a White House task force aimed at improving prevention of and response to rape and sexual assault at colleges and universities. In May, the U.S. Education Department released a list of 55 schools being investigated for their handling of sexual assault cases. Michigan State University was one of those schools. Now, MSU has announced that it's revamping its sexual harassment policy. To learn about the new policy and what it will mean for students, staff, and faculty at MSU, I sat down with Paulette Granberry Russell, Director of the Office for Inclusion and Intercultural Initiatives, which investigates sexual assault complaints at the university, and Holly Rosen, Director of Safe Place, MSU's domestic violence shelter. Paulette told me that one of the biggest changes the university made was expanding the definition of what kinds of behaviors qualify as sexual harassment.
Probably the most obvious changes in the policy are in response to new amendments that were made in the Violence Against Women's Act, particularly, so that our work is expanding beyond sexual misconduct to include now relationship violence. And that includes, for example, domestic violence, dating violence, and stalking.
Holly, I'm wondering if starting out you could talk about the distinctions between some of these terms. How do you define domestic violence versus dating violence, for example?
Well, dating violence is any violence that occurs between two people that are dating. They're in an intimate partnered relationship. It expands to domestic violence if they also are married, have a child in common, have lived together at any point in their lives, or are currently living together. We call dating and domestic violence relationship violence at MSU because we want to be as inclusive as possible.
Did you look at the actual definition of stalking? What qualifies as stalking?
Well, there's stalking that falls under domestic or dating violence, and that's when somebody is contacting you, monitoring where you're going. It can occur while you're in a relationship, an abusive and controlling relationship, and stalking also occurs more frequently when you end an abusive relationship.
Paulette, what will these rule changes mean for a student who wants to report a case of sexual assault or relationship violence to the university?
Well, I think this policy provides a clear roadmap for where one goes to report relationship violence or sexual misconduct. It identifies for them the process that we will engage in when we conduct an investigation and the rights and responsibilities for them as well as for the institution. It helps to clarify rights and responsibilities of the individual that's accused and ways in which they're to respond. There's quite a bit here, I think, that is intended to aid and support individuals who bring a complaint.
How did the university decide what changes they were going to make, though, to these policies? What kind of input did you get from students and staff or faculty? Or did you get more input from the feds than you expected?
Well, it was probably a combination of all of those things, certainly from the feds in terms of clarification and from the White House task force that I had referenced earlier and some of the work that it had done in its report and recommendations, but certainly from the broader campus community. And so we hosted public forums, which allowed individuals to come to the forum and identify for us what their issues were associated with the current policy as well as the proposed policy. The draft of the policy was vetted through our faculty senate so that faculty also had an opportunity to provide input, and to the extent that staff who are closely associated with the work that we do, providing input not only in the context of the policy itself, the draft policy, but their experiences.
Holly, how much overlap is there between problems of relationship violence and sexual assault?
Well, there's a huge overlap. A lot of people who are experiencing relationship violence also are experiencing sexual violence, because sexual violence is one of the tactics or type of abuse that people in ongoing abusive relationships experience. Sexual assault can also occur outside of that context. But there's still some overlap in terms of how we respond. The community tends to respond in a very similar manner to these types of victimizations.
Are there any drawbacks to putting both of them in one category, though?
Well, the policy looks at different definitions and different behaviors. It's definitely seeing them as distinct things: dating violence, domestic violence, sexual assault, sexual harassment, stalking. The policy is very inclusive, but it specifically defines different types of behaviors.
How effective do you think that policy changes, or even changes to the law for that matter, can be when it comes to changing the cultural perceptions of sexual assault and relationship violence?
Well, certainly changing policies and laws is one step in many. Having a law or a policy in place, if it's not properly enforced or people aren't trained well, is not very effective. I mean, certainly with domestic violence, there's been a lot of laws that protect survivors and hold perpetrators accountable, and in many communities, they're not enforced. And I think that Michigan State University has had a really comprehensive process in developing and revising this policy, and they're very committed. Those who are implementing it are very committed to making sure that the staff are well trained and that this policy will actually have an impact. But I'm sure that there's a lot of campuses that are putting policies in writing and not a lot will change. But I'm optimistic that at Michigan State University, there will be some really favorable changes.
Holly Rosen is our guest. She is director of MSU Safe Place, Michigan State's domestic violence shelter. Paulette Granberry-Russell also joins us. She is the director of the Office for Inclusion and Intercultural Initiatives at MSU. We're talking about changes to the university's sexual harassment policy. Paulette, the university came under a lot of criticism last month after conservative Washington Post columnist George Will, who has made some controversial statements regarding the prevalence of rape on college campuses, was announced as a commencement speaker. A lot of students said they thought it undermined what the university said was a commitment to addressing the problem of sexual assault on campus. Do you think these new rules address some of the concerns that students have raised?
I absolutely believe that the policy as newly implemented does address some of the concerns. And in the context of one individual who offered commentary on campus sexual assaults, as I've said repeatedly, one person does not define the work that's necessary to be done at Michigan State or within all of higher education to respond to issues of relationship violence and sexual assault. To the extent that we have to engage with students, faculty, and staff differently on these issues, if we're going to create the kind of change that we need to create a safer campus community, that's what we're committed to doing. That's what we've been committed to doing. And this is one more additional tool in our arsenal that will allow us to do that. One of the most positive impacts of this work has been the collaborations across entities that are engaged in doing this work. For too long, I think we operated in individual silos. Our office, of course, doing the investigations, but not necessarily connecting in the same way that we are now with either law enforcement or with the sexual assault program, Safe Place, and the range of other campus offices that are committed to making this a safe campus environment. We're all working in partnership with each other. We all have a common purpose and common goal.
I'd like to bring up another perspective. A month ago, in a widely read story on Slate.com, Emily Yoffe of Slate wrote of what she calls the college rape overcorrection, and I'll quote here, "Unfortunately, under the worthy mandate of protecting victims of sexual assault, procedures are being put in place at colleges that presume the guilt of the accused. Colleges, encouraged by federal officials, are instituting solutions to sexual violence against women that abrogate the civil rights of men." Unquote. She refers to extremely low standards of proof, lack of basic due process, and a handful of other issues. These assertions would seem to complicate an already extremely challenging issue. My question, in an effort to appease federal Title IX officials, are universities, is Michigan State allowing due process to go by the wayside?
No. And I know that there are others who can challenge that, but I think one has to have a deeper understanding of due process and how much process is due. both under the Constitution with respect to these kinds of issues. And I don't want to overly complicate the response to the question. Our work has been heavily guided by this notion of balance, due process, assuring that individuals are clear about process as one, you know, whether it's the investigatory process as well as the hearings process, to the extent that individuals want to have an attorney present during an investigation. They can have an attorney present. Now, they can't speak. The attorney cannot speak on their behalf, but they can be there to advise. So I think to the extent that people are concerned that we are doing our work in a way of appeasing the agencies that are out there responsible for monitoring our work under Title IX, I wouldn't regard what we're doing as appeasing.
The process, you would argue that the process is as fair as it would be in a criminal court?
Well, to the extent that we are providing protections and opportunities for individuals to either face those who have accused them of violating university policy, they have that opportunity. To the extent that they have advisors that are there to advise and perhaps guide the ways in which we do our work and their responses to that, that's there. Our responsibilities under Title IX, especially if it involves sexual harassment, which, you know, is that broader umbrella of relationship violence and sexual misconduct, imposes on us, if you will, an obligation to assure that the behavior stops. And I think what we've attempted to do through this policy is build in enough protections for all of the parties involved.
I'd like to ask both of you what you feel the next steps are for the university. Where else do you see opportunities for improvement when it comes to sexual assault and relationship violence on campus? Holly?
Well, I think that, you know, we're just at the point now where we're implementing this policy and we're going to have more investigations. And so I think the next steps are, you know, getting enough people in place to do the investigations and that kind of thing. That's the first step, getting them well trained. Beyond the investigations, I think just, you know, part of this policy includes letting people know about resources. And I think that's really great because a lot of people who are dealing with domestic violence, relationship violence and stalking and sexual assault do not know that MSU has free programs that are confidential and a lot of good resources for safety planning and advocacy. And, you know, I think that the next steps, you know, will include making sure more and more people know about that. And the training requirements, too, of these regulations are that more staff and faculty will be trained about not only the reporting policies, but also resources on campus. And those are all really, really good things.
Paulette, what about you? Where is there opportunity for still more improvement?
Sure. I think there are three places. When you asked the question, I thought education, you know, it is now an expectation and a requirement that students, faculty, and staff receive education on not only the policy, but the resources, as well as a deeper understanding of ways in which one can intervene as a bystander. And so there's greater emphasis in the educational area. I think another opportunity for us is extending our efforts beyond the boundaries of the campus community. So, for example, the city of East Lansing has through resolution, agreed to partner with Michigan State in ways in which the broader community outside the campus can help us do our work. We have DTN, which is one of the largest property management entities in the community that have also partnered with Michigan State in educating tenants who are students on MSU's policies and resources. And so, you know, expanding our work with law enforcement beyond the MSU Police Department is another part of our engagement. So there are plenty of opportunities here, not just in terms of the digging into the policy and assuring that the campus resources are in place and that we're responding in timely ways. But I think part of what we're hoping to do through all of this work is expand people's understanding of what relationship violence is, as well as sexual misconduct, and ways that one can prevent, respond, and educate in order to perhaps build not only a campus community that is more responsive and safe, but a broader community that understands these issues. And perhaps then this need for societal change around this issue will take place. If it's happening on our campuses, we know that we have to extend that work beyond our campus.
We've been talking about the recent changes to Michigan State University's sexual harassment policy. The updated policy includes, for the first time, relationship violence and stalking under the umbrella of sexual harassment. Our guests today have been Paulette Granberry Russell, director of MSU's Office for Inclusion and Intercultural Initiatives, and Holly Rosen, director of MSU Safe Place, MSU's domestic violence shelter. Holly, Paulette, many thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.